And welcome back to our live legal call-in program, 1-800-LAW-CALL, with our guest attorney here this evening, Jim Cardia, from the firm of Shakur Federico in Staten, where you can get answers to any concerns you may have about medical negligence, wrongful death, or personal injury that may involve yourself, a friend, or a loved one. Call us right now. We have some open lines. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-LAW-CALL is the number. Numerically, that's 1-800-529-2255. And to arrange a free private conversation with a member of the firm, just press option 2. This next story, Jim, is about an infant with a tethered cord at the bottom of his spine. And what happened when it was improperly removed? First of all, a tethered cord is what?
Well, tethered spinal cord syndrome, Frank, is a neurologic disorder caused by tissue attachments that limit the movement of the spinal cord within the spinal column. And these attachments can cause an abnormal stretching of the spinal cord. And in this case, after the infant was born, a fatty deposit was noted at the base of the spine. The following day, an MRI of the spine confirmed the additional presence of a tethered cord. And accordingly, the infant uneventfully underwent removal of this fatty deposit with a plan to readmit him subsequently to lice or remove the tissue that was tethering his spinal cord. The infant was then readmitted to the hospital for the surgery due to neurologic signs of active tethering, and these signs included decreased urinary stream and lower extremity numbness and weakness. And again, the surgery, Frank, was uneventful, and the infant was discharged home without incident. However, early the following year, the infant's neurologic signs returned, and an MRI was once again performed, which indicated that a second detethering of the spinal cord was required. Accordingly, the patient, or infant, we should say, was readmitted to the hospital and underwent a second detethering surgery. Unfortunately, Frank, it was during this second surgery that the breach of the standards of care occurred. When performing this type of surgery, Frank, the standards of care require the identification, isolation, and protection of vital structures in the area of the surgery, including the bottom of the spinal cord, which is called the cauda equina. And it was during the course of this surgery that the defendants failed to identify, isolate, and protect the cauda equina, and in fact partially transected it. And it was this transection of the cauda equina that has rendered the patient a paraplegic. He now has no use of his legs, bladder, bowel, has lost normal male sexual function, has suffered bilateral hip dislocations, and has suffered a number of additional complications or problems as a result of this injury.
So this was an infant, my goodness, and now obviously the infant has grown into, I guess, adulthood by now, it would appear.
Well, no longer an infant. It's still a young man, but these problems are obviously permanent, right, and will last well into adulthood and beyond.
I mean, it's a lifetime problem now.
That's right. It's a permanent injury. So as long as this patient lives, he will be saddled, if you will, with these problems. And it all centered around the failure to identify, isolate, and protect these vital structures. When you're performing surgery in and around vital and important nerves, it's incumbent upon the surgeon to make sure you're aware of the location of these nerves and protect them from injury to avoid nicking it or stretching it, or in this case, the most severe of consequences, transection of the nerves completely. And it was this transection that's going to cause this young patient these devastating consequences for the rest of his life.
A paraplegic, right?
A paraplegic. Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, you're talking about no use of legs, no use of the bladder, bowel, no normal sexual function, hip dislocations. I could go on and on. The injuries are that devastating, Frank.
This case here calls out for some comment, I guess, on those who feel there should be caps on the awarding of damages in cases like this. They feel like if there's a $500,000 cap or $250,000, that's going to be sufficient. But can you imagine, from the time you're an infant all the way until your adulthood, until the day that you pass on, you are not going to be the person that maybe God intended you to be.
Well, and that's exactly right. In this case, is a perfect example, Frank, as you said, of why caps are not fair. Some people are calling for a one-size-fits-all cap. People have thrown around the number of $250,000. And they say, well, $250,000 is an adequate number to compensate an injured patient for his or her pain or suffering. But when you're talking about an infant who is now a paraplegic, has no bladder or bowel function, and will have no bladder or bowel function for the rest of his or her life, I really challenge anybody to say $250,000, less attorney's fees and expenses, would be an adequate award for a patient who suffers such devastating injuries.
And this is all borne out because, you know, people tend to read everything in the newspaper to be actual or factual and to be the truth. And many times they'll see a lawsuit for $10 million and they say, my goodness, you know, $10 million, I might give up the use of my arm for $10 million. But the truth of the matter is that when you have to live, when you live this kind of a situation yourself, or a family has to live these kind of situations, the $250,000 minus, as you said, the expenses and the fees and what have you, just doesn't cut it.
It doesn't. And, you know, there really is a lot of misinformation that they spread about lawsuits and our justice system. I've periodically received emails at my office from people forwarding on these mass emails of all these silly or frivolous lawsuits where the burglar comes in and breaks his leg and he sues the owner of the house and gets $5 million. I've received such emails, and the bottom line is most, if not all of them, are completely made up. And there are websites that you can peruse to prove that most of these outrageous stories and these outrageous lawsuits that supposedly result in millions of dollars are really not real lawsuits. They're urban myths that are being spread and forwarded via the social media. And unfortunately, some people actually believe those stories.
And, of course, the good example of that is the famous or infamous McDonald's case, spilling the hot coffee.
Well, I could talk for a long time about that, Frank. We don't have enough time here tonight, but there was actually a documentary that came out on the McDonald's coffee case. I believe it aired on one of the networks. I won't mention it, but where it exposed a lot of myths about that case. I think the general public even has a misunderstanding about what really happened in that case.
Yeah. And by the way, Snopes.com is a fraud-busting website, and the McDonald's story you just mentioned was on an HBO special.
Well, I'll leave it to you to say
it.
I didn't know whether it was appropriate or not.
Thanks to Cliff. Thank you very much, Jim Cardea, and don't forget to join us next week here on 1-800-LAW-CALL. I'm Frank Luber. Have